Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I think the American people have a right to know if the Vice President of the United States or his family profited from his position as Vice President during the last administration.
I hope that my colleagues will realize we can't have another 4 years of this if we want a party to come back to.
I promised in my interview process that I would serve with integrity and honor. I make this commitment to you and every member of Maricopa County.
Judge Wake puts on a robe in the morning and thinks he's God, but he's not. I want to tell you what everyone down at the courthouse needs to know. It's time for Judge Wake to retire. He's an embarrassment to the legal community.
And joining us to talk about the new Maricopa County Attorney, Vice President Mike Pence's visit to Arizona, and more, Arlona Romero with the Arizona Chamber Foundation and former state lawmaker David Lujan, now with the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Both of you, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Lorna, let's start off with the Maricopa County Attorney. I know we don't necessarily know all the ins and outs of this, but Rachel Mitchell was named to be the interim when Bill Montgomery became a Supreme Court Justice. And now we have a different choice there. I think many people thought maybe it was a shoe-in for Rachel Mitchell. But what do you make of the choice? What do you make of the whole process?
You know, and I'm not intimately involved or have any past experience with this process. But from what came out of it with a unanimous decision and bipartisan support and all of the praises that have been happening to Alistair, you know, obviously she was probably the lead candidate out of the group. What this means in the future moving forward, I don't know. I'm sure plenty of people are going to throw their names in the ring for the upcoming election cycle. This might be the race to watch. But obviously, during that day-long process, she must have said something that impressed the entire County Board of Supervisors for them to make that decision.
And David, we had speculated that maybe there would be a choice that the Citizen Commission came up with and the supervisors would reject it. Sounds like it was fairly kumbaya. Did that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah, because especially since it took so long, I thought, you know, maybe there was going to be some division there and they would come out with a surprise choice. But no, I was surprised. I think, you know, I've heard good things about her, but, you know, now the key will be, is she going to differentiate herself from Bill Montgomery? Because she's going to have to run again in a year. And or is she going to sort of follow the same policies that he followed? Because I think when you get to the general election, you know, there's going to be a big push for reformers. Arizona is a state that spends more to incarcerate people than it does on all three of our public universities combined. And that doesn't bode well for our future economy. And so I think, you know, the voters next year are going to be looking for somebody who's going to be addressing that and is going to be reforming our criminal justice system. And if she's going to be somebody who's going to continue along the lines of Bill Montgomery, I think that's going to be a contention against her.
Lorna, how much do you think Adele can really differentiate herself? As David mentioned, she has to run again next year. How much can she do? How much should she be thinking about maybe trying to set an agenda that could allow her to win re-election next year?
You know, and that's a good question, because it remains to be seen how many people are even going to jump into the primary. We've seen this many times before when there's just multiple people in a race and you're like, you can just pick a name out of a hat and that might be the person who wins when it's so divided. So I think the indication I get from her and her comments yesterday is that she's going to do her due diligence, chat with her internal team, and just, you know, do the daily work of the job. When it comes to differentiating herself, and to piggyback on what David said, I don't know how much attention voters are going to pay to this race. This is going to be inside baseball. There's so much that's going to be happening this upcoming election cycle.
Really?
A down ballot race. I know, shocking. There's a lot happening in 2020. So I don't know if these issues are going to be front and center for it to be a distinguishing vote for folks. Mm. Yeah.
David, from a process perspective, it seems like it went fairly smoothly. The county, the Board of Supervisors set up the Citizens Committee. They met. They sent a list. The County Board of Supervisors met, picked somebody from that list. Is that, do you think, maybe a model going forward for how other interim positions might be able to be picked?
I think so. Yeah, I think the process went really well. You know, I think it would have been different if we had saw some surprise pick that came from without of that. But, you know, to their credit, they looked at the people that applied and spent a lot of time, it appears, to review the different qualifications and candidates. And so I think it was a process that people appreciate. I don't know if there was any sort of like public opportunity to comment. That might have been something that was missing. But I think, yeah, I think it was a good process.
Lorna, because I love hypotheticals, I'm going to come back to what you said about maybe because this is so down ballot in a huge presidential year. If Bill Montgomery had not gotten the Supreme Court choice, would he have in some ways among liberal and progressive groups, which I know you don't speak for, but just in terms of your perspective, would he have turned into sort of a mini Arpaio in some ways because of criminal justice reform and the lack of it? Would he have been more of a target and now this position is more like, okay, a lot of Democrats and Republicans are going to go for it. It's an important position, but it's going to be less in the spotlight. Would it have been more in the spotlight if Montgomery were still there?
Potentially. And I mean, as you said, I'm not a Democrat strategist. And so I would imagine they would spend their money wisely, especially in 2020 with so many other contentious races going on. But yeah, you never know. That could have been an issue. They could have tried to make him a big target. Whether or not they would have been successful as painting him as an Arpaio, I would strongly disagree with that. Mm-hmm. They're very different people. But yeah, that could have been a potential issue. But now I don't know if that can be an opportunity for them to paint Republicans in that kind of light in 2020.
Yeah, David, would Montgomery have been more of a target for Democrats, someone who would be considered more defeatable since we really don't know much about Adele at this point?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he would have definitely been a target. I mean, you'd already seen for the last couple of years a number of groups, particularly in the Latino community, that had their sights set on him. And, you know, I agree with Lorna. I think this is going to be a very difficult race to get attention in 2020 because of everything else that's going on. But I do think that this will sort of stand out among the local races because there is been such a push for criminal justice reform at the Capitol. And I think it's an area where particularly some of these grassroots groups in communities of color are really organizing around. And this is a really important issue. Like I said, we're incarcerating at a much higher rate than most other states, and it should be troubling to all Arizonans.
David, there are a few Democrats already running for this seat. They obviously started their election campaigns when Montgomery was county attorney. Do you expect more Democrats to get in, maybe more high-profile, well-known Democrats to get in at this point, given that Montgomery's not there?
I think that's a good chance, yes. I think, you know, who knows? We're still a ways out, and I would say in the next couple of months you could see other people, you know, expressing interest.
Lorna, would you expect Republicans to get in as well? Do you think Adele might have a clear path?
Potentially. I mean, I guess it'll depend on the political calculus going on in the next few weeks. But like I said earlier, this might be, you know, a race where a bunch of people are throwing their names into the hat, and we'll see what happens. I do think that this is probably the race with the potential to have many candidates involved. But again, the attention that gets drawn to it, yeah, beyond those of us in the bubble, I don't know how far that's going to go out.
I mean, I think candidates would have to look, can they raise the money? Because mm-hmm. that's going to be, you know, you're going to need the money to kind of raise out of all of the other stuff, all the other distractions. And then, like, as Lorna said, now we have Alistair, who's going to be sort of an incumbent. She's going to have a year in that chair. So it's going to be, you know, stuff that people are going to have to really consider whether it's worth it to go forward.
And is it safe to say that it might be tougher to raise money for this race, given, as you guys have both said, all the other stuff on the ballot?
It's going to be yes. tough for all candidates yes. to raise money. It's just
there's only, you know, so much money yeah. to go around, folks. Yeah. So we'll see.
So, David, earlier this week, federal judge Neil Wake, really interesting decision, at least as far as Governor Ducey was concerned. Apparently, putting on the robe does not make you God, which I wasn't really sure about at this point. Right. Were you surprised that the governor's reaction was so strong, considering to some, the legal arguments were a concern, actually, for others? That did the governor do the right thing? Was there actually support in Congress? Did Congress approve these sorts of things? Well, there was confusion, but let's start with the governor's reaction.
I thought the governor was a little over the top in his reaction. It was surprising because we had seen a similar ruling already in this. I think, you know, maybe what struck a nerve with the governor was the fact that the judge's decision had some language in it about how the judge was essentially recognizing what most teachers and parents across the state are recognizing, and that is Arizona's public education system is underfunded, and he connected the blame to tax cuts and tax credits, and which is true in my opinion. But it might have had a little bit of extra sting coming in a judicial ruling, and I think that might have upset the governor.
Lorna, was that a big part of it there? Because the governor, you know, this is now, of course, whenever anybody tweets or anything, is he trying to be Trumpian? What's going on here? It just seemed much more emotional than we usually see from Governor Ducey.
Well, I mean, the governor is very level-headed. He's always very respectful and mature, and so obviously this goes to show that he was very upset with the ruling. Do I think it was over the top or inappropriate? No. I mean, every elected official, when they disagree with a legal legal ruling comments of their disagreements. I mean, we've heard this kind of language before on both sides of the aisle. I do agree with David. There was commentary in the ruling that was kind of a poke at the governor and the legislature and folks about the fact that how he claims they don't fund education. And so I think that the governor's response was perfectly acceptable.
Will this start a trend, though, if we disagree with someone? Why don't you just retire? Go away, please.
That's fine. People can say that to me, too.
Was it in any way surprising, given that the actual impact of the ruling, at least in the immediate future, seems to be pretty much non-existent? I've not heard from anybody who says that the money that has been distributed so far, or that will be for the next 5 to 6 years, is in any danger.
No, and that's correct. I mean, in the immediate future, that's not going to have an impact to the actual transaction. I think it's just the underlying issue and principle of it. And as we mentioned, the fact that the ruling ended up having a political lens to it and commentary, especially when education has been such a topic of concern in the state and the governor has done so much, I'm sure that was probably the main reason why he was upset with the way that that was framed.
But I think his ruling, I think, is a fair warning for the future, because Prop 123 is going to expire in 2025, and that's going to be about a $250 million annual fiscal cliff that we are approaching if we don't address where that revenue is going to come to. And I think what was frustrating to many of us education advocates this past legislative session is that, you know, despite the fact that we're going to have these future revenue needs, the legislature this past session passed an additional $386 million in tax cuts. And that's kind of what the judge was pointing at in his ruling, is that saying that, you know, the emergency that was created by Prop 123 was because of all the tax cuts and the funding cuts that we've seen that are connected. And so I think he's saying that when we come to 2025, you're going to need to go back to Congress and you're going to need to get their approval. And so as a state, we should be thinking about these things moving forward.
Yeah, and just a few things that I want to point out regarding what Prop 123, since this happened quite a few years ago, in political memory at least, quite a few years ago, that had bipartisan support. You know, that was a proposition where but folks from both sides of the aisle came together to support it, passed through by the voters, et cetera. And so I know that now it's turning into a political football, but a few years ago, people who weren't fighting as much were on the same page with that one, first and foremost. Second, we can have a whole separate show talking about tax cuts and the impact that's had on the state, because I know David has his opinion, but I think we can point to those reforms as what's led to the economic growth that we're currently experiencing in Arizona. So there's different perspectives.
But then there are some who would say economic growth, absolutely. But mm-hmm. then could more of that economic growth be put into the schools?
Correct. And I think it's unfair to say that the legislature and the governor have not been advocating for more dollars in education. I mean, the bulk of the cuts that happened were during the Great Recession and during the prior administration. I think we can all agree on that. And the legislature and the governor have been diligent about making those investments and while making sure that we're not putting the state in fiscal risk.
Well, yeah, we should have that other show sometime. But the fact is, our schools today have less per pupil funding than they had a decade ago, and we still have a huge cliff to get out of in terms of properly funding our school, a huge hole to get out of. And so, that I think is what sort of Judge Wake was getting at in his opinion, and saying, you know, look, you're cutting taxes year after year. And that is what's leading to the funding deficit in our schools.
That's David Lujan. Also here is Lorna Romero with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. We are in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today are Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber Foundation and former state lawmaker David Lujan, now with the Arizona Center for Economic Progress.
Guys, I want to ask you about the op-ed that former Arizona Senator Jeff Flake wrote for The Washington Post, basically telling his Republican colleagues, you have to do something about the president. You should not vote for his reelection. You should not support his reelection. If you don't support impeachment, you shouldn't support him. Lorna, what do you make of what Senator Flake had to say?
Well, it's not surprising. I think for those of us who've been seeing or watching Senator Flake for the past few years, he is not a Trump fan. So I think this is no surprise.
Understatement.
Understatement. And he's just vocalizing his opinion. I'm like, there is a contingency of Republicans who do not support the president. And I mean, it's a small contingency at this point. And so I think he's one of those, especially now he's a former senator. he feels that he can be much more outspoken about his position. And so whether or not that's going to gain traction remains to be seen. I highly doubt it. But, you know, Senator Flake is entitled to his opinion, and he's expressing it. But I don't think it should come as a surprise to anybody.
David, is this a former senator shouting into the wilderness here?
Probably. I think it's probably easier when you're not in elected office anymore to be saying that. I think we're not seeing a whole lot of courage from the sitting senators, the Republican senators in the United States Congress. And so I think it's going to come down to the people, the voters, you know, in states like Arizona, which is becoming more purple. And, you know, I think I already saw a clip in Missouri where there was a town hall and some, you know, the senator there was getting some pushback from her constituents. And so I think as the Republican senators start to see that a growing number of independents and moderates and Republican moderates are going against the president, I think it's going to be interesting to see whether they're going to decide to go against sort of that ultra-conservative base or they're going to make a decision to speak out against the president. Right now, I think it's probably they're most likely going to stick with the president and not counter that.
Well, David, what are reasonable expectations? Because I think, you know, we often like to invoke, especially in our conversations, the courage of politicians or not. And to have expectations that they're willing to risk losing seems like it's shouting in the wilderness. It just seems like that's you get in office, you want to stay in office because you think you can influence things, hopefully for good things, but you just want to influence things. So are we expecting too much from Republican senators? Should we ask them to speak out like Mitt Romney but then still vote with the president? I guess I'm wondering what you as a Democratic member of a Democratic Party member, what do you think about that?
I would hope that if you are in Congress, if you, you know, regardless of party, when you have the President of the United States asking other countries for political or for investigating your political rivals, then regardless of party affiliation, you would be speaking out against that. Because if that becomes acceptable, then, you know, heaven help us as a country in terms of where we're going. And so at some point, every elected official has to, I think, make that conscious decision and say, you know, we need to speak out against this because it's just flat out wrong.
And Lorna, the reason I asked you is when Mark and I had Senator Flake on, former Senator Flake on this week, the thing he said was he made very clear, no, he would have liked to have stayed in the Senate and mm-hmm. influenced things that way, but he thought he was going to lose. Mm-hmm. So are expectations too high? Even if we as an average citizen say, it wouldn't be great to hear someone talking against someone in their party they disagree with, it just really doesn't happen that much, though.
No, I do not think expectations are too high. I think that we need to get back to a place where that's the norm. All levels of government, both parties, if you disagree with someone in your party, whether that's the highest elected official in the land, et cetera, you should feel empowered to voice that opinion regardless of the situation. And so it could be something as big as what we've been hearing in the news the past few weeks, or it can be, you know, a simple policy issue. People should not be afraid to disagree and be able to have that conversation in a very professional and respectful manner. And I think that's what we need to get back to as a whole.
Lorna, one of the things that Senator Flake talked about was this idea of an inflection point somewhere, that if something were to happen, that he thought that maybe some of his former colleagues would heed his advice and maybe distance themselves from the president or even maybe vote against him or strip their support from him. Do you believe there is an inflection point? And I'm wondering what you think that what would have to happen for Republicans in the Senate to say, OK, we can't go along with this anymore.
I don't really know. So much has happened in this administration and things that I thought would probably – there's a new norm, let's just put it that way. And so I think at this point, since we're so close to the 2020 election cycle, most folks are just going to say, let the voters decide. So I don't anticipate people going out in front of this as Senator Flake is asking them to do. I think they're going to just rely on the 2020 election for the voters to decide.
But I think as politicians, as they start to put their fingers to the wind and they see that if public opinion is starting to shift in terms of, you know, that they could potentially lose their elections, then I think you might start to see that. And we are starting to see some of those polls really start to shift in terms of people wanting to see impeachment. And so, you know, I don't think we're quite there yet, but I mean, I think there is a possibility that that could happen.
And just to jump in, you know, we mentioned this earlier. There's a lot of noise right now, and a lot of this is inside baseball, really in the weeds. I have a hard time keeping track of what's going on. I was telling David earlier, I went away from Twitter for like an hour last week, and like the whole world had changed. And so, and we're folks who track this stuff all the time. So I don't know how much it's resonating with the American people who aren't living this day to day, and we're still a year out. So much can happen, and all I know is last week, you know, the Republicans and the president raised a lot of money off of this too. So I don't know if it's really having the impact that a lot of pundits like to say it is, but a lot can happen in a year. And so I just don't know if this is going to be the issue that's going to be a deciding factor for the president or Republicans as a whole.
And someone who was in to raise money in part was Vice President Mike Pence, came into Arizona this week trying to help Martha McSally in her, I guess I call it a re-election, not really a re-election bid at this point because she was appointed an election bid by Senator McSally. David, what do you make of Mike Pence's presence here? And in part, I want to start with the fact that this obviously indicates that Arizona is seen as competitive. It's not just us saying that. It actually is.
Oh, I definitely think it is. I think Arizona is definitely going to be on the radar for the presidential election. I think you're going to see a lot of the candidates on both sides coming to Arizona. You know, I was watching various cable news shows yesterday, and I saw a lot of clips with the vice president here speaking and basically admitting the wrongdoing of the president. He wasn't saying that the president was wrong, but he was basically defending the president and, you know, of the and basically siding with him. And right beside him was the governor and Senator McSally. And to me, that doesn't seem like it's a very good visual for them today, and I think it's going to be an even worse visual a year from now when Senator McSally is on the ballot and people are deciding whether they're going to vote for her. She's been very loyal to President Trump, and I think, you know, as more and more of this comes out and more Arizonans, again, those independent and moderate voters are going to move away from the president. It's going to hurt her, and it's going to hurt Governor Ducey and whatever his future political ambitions are, too. So I think it's a mistake, but, you know, they keep doing it.
Well, I mean, David has his opinions. I mean, you have the vice president of the United States coming into the state of Arizona. The governor and the U.S. senator are going to join him for that. And as somebody who's worked for Senator McCain, there's so many times where you are at an event and somebody's asked a question what the news of the day is, and you're standing there when it's happening. And so I won't bank on that being a big visual for McSally a year from now. Like I said, a lot's going to happen. A lot's transpired in 48 hours. I would anticipate that McSally's going to focus on her race. I do agree Arizona is a little bit more purple than it used to be. And so I think she's learned from the last election cycle, and I anticipate that she's just going to go full force ahead, making sure that she is staying true to her McSally brand, regardless of the outside noise.
Lorna, Vice President Pence did say when he was in town that he anticipated the Trump campaign, the Trump reelection campaign, would be spending a lot of time in Arizona. Is that something, obviously we don't know what's going to happen an hour from now, much less 6 or 8 months from now. Do you anticipate that is something that Senator McSally will continue to welcome as she gets closer to her election campaign?
I believe so. And I believe a lot of it's going to depend on the timing and what the context is of what's happening in the future. None of us have crystal balls, unfortunately. But like I said, he is the president of the United States. If he's coming to the state of Arizona, she is the U.S. senator. She's going to be there to greet him and attend events with him as well. But I do anticipate that the president and vice president will be in Arizona a lot more the upcoming year.
But it'll be interesting to see as this goes on how many of those candidates or sitting senators are going to be making phone calls behind the scenes saying, please don't come to Arizona. You know, we don't want you to be here. And I think, you know, they say they're going to make lots of trips here, but how many, you know, how often will Senator McSally want to be standing next to President Trump? And it's not just the visual of standing next to him. And it gets to this fact, you know, as this unfolds and as more evidence comes out against our president, is Senator McSally going to speak out? And if she doesn't, if she remains silent, then that's going to be, I think, a critical factor for her going into 2020.
And I think one thing that we can't ignore, because all of this has been focused on the president, he is going to be running against a Democrat. And a lot of this is going to be in the context of who that nominee is going to be or who those front runners are. And if they are the Elizabeth Warrens of the world or Bernie Sanders, I don't think that's going to play well here in Arizona. So a lot of that's going to depend on who the president is running against and who McSally is obviously going to want to make sure is not going to be the next president.
And Lorna, finally, we just have a few seconds left. So when it comes to the crystal ball, which I'll ask you to get out that you don't have one, how possible is it, though, that President Trump remains popular among his base and yet his presence on the top of the ticket does end up hurting Martha McSally? Could we really see a split there?
Potentially. You know, and I guess it's all going to depend on turnout. And as I mentioned earlier, we're in a different world. You know, all of the, you know, political theories of the past after 2016 kind of fell by the wayside. And so this Trump effect and the Trump phenomenon is something that people can't fully grasp. He can rally a group of voters that typically aren't engaged. And so I you know, we all look at the 2018 midterm as kind of like a gauge for it, but Trump wasn't on the ticket. So I think that that's something people need to factor in.
All right, we'll have to stop there. Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber Foundation, David Lujan with the Arizona Center for Economic Progress. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.